Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show on another Sunday. QT and Sign Guy with you like normal. Happy Canada Day tomorrow to all the Canadian listeners and fans. We hope you enjoy the holiday. And of course, in the lower 48 in the United States, Independence Day later this week. Hope you have a nice, safe celebration. Real fast before we jump into things, if you're looking for wrestling today, there in Paris, Kentucky, you have PTW. 49th State Wrestling in Alaska today, featuring Sunny Days. You also have PNPW in Astoria, Oregon, and you can find myself later in Blue Collar Wrestling at the North Portland Eagles. And I want to bring our guest on the show today, speaking of Blue Collar Wrestling in Portland, Lone Star, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Sangai.
Well, Lone Star, one of the things that you have done since you were with us last is capture the NothingElseOn.tv television championship. Do you want to tell us what it took for you to get to that championship and a little bit about what the title represents?
Well, you know, I had to go up against a guy by the name of the Party Goblin. Tough guy. Definitely unique. he was a tough opponent, man. He was a tough opponent. Very good with the hands and feet, like myself. And it was a battle that kind of took its toll. But you know, in the end, I still come out victorious.
Absolutely. And having faced the Goblin myself, I can confirm he is very, very good at what he does. Great competitor. A Goblin, someone that had been at Blue Collar for not a great length of time. He's been around maybe 6 months or so. How familiar were you with Goblin heading into the series that led to you winning the championship?
Actually, completely unfamiliar. I had never faced the guy before. I'd never heard of him before. He showed up. Had a few matches at Blue Collar, and then they put him into the series with me for the title. And, it's one of those things that you can't really – you try to study up on somebody, and it's hard to study up on somebody when you can't find much out about them. So it's one of those things that just you have to work at.
One of the other things that you have been doing a lot of lately is tag team wrestling. You and Mac Traeger, a semi-regular tag team, you've been teamed up for several months now. You, of course, kind of fluctuate between tag teams and singles action for a lot of your career. What do you think about the current tag team situation in Blue Collar?
You know, it's tag teaming's it's difficult unless you can really bond with your partner. Mac and I, that's a unique setup. It's definitely like a yin and yang, complete opposites, him and I. But you know, it's one complements the other. It works well with us. Tag teaming, I mean, I've been doing it for years. Tag team titles off and on all over the place. And it's one of those things that if you don't jive with that person, things just aren't going to work. But I've been lucky enough, fortunate enough to make it work with the ladies and the gentlemen that I've been tagged up with, you know, to make the tag teams work.
Now, of course, you are a lone star, but when you're in a tag team situation, there's a minimum of two of you, thus, you know, making a little bit of a irony situation happening. Do you find yourself having a preference when it comes to tags versus singles?
I'm a lot more comfortable in the singles matches, but it's just, I guess it's the Lone Star attitude, I from what I've been told. But when it comes to the tag team thing, you know, like I said, if you jive with that person and you can really connect, Mac and I have a good connection. Like myself, you know, when it comes to wrestling, he gets it. I get it. So that it works. We can tell the story. We can do what needs to be done.
You recently also ventured down to California and had a match down there. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about what the promotion was and what led you to decide to go down I-5 into California?
Well, that would be Rumble in the Redwood 6, out of Eureka, California. Joe Sousa is the promoter down there. He only does a show once a year. And it draws well. We had probably 500-600 people down there. It's a log-in town, and man, they love their wrestling down there. It was a good time, you know. I've known Joe for many, many years. I talked to him at CAC the last year, and he invited myself and Tommy Celsius down. We were able to formulate a tag team and took on Dr. Cleaver and another young gentleman. Unfortunately, I cannot remember his name, but the match was good. It was solid, and it was a good time. It was a really good time. You know, anytime you can get out to further your career, to enhance things, to get yourself out there, to get known, it's a good thing in wrestling.
You referenced the CAC. I know you go down there fairly often. Paul Moonshine was a guest on the Sign of the Times web show just the other day, and we were discussing your ventures down to CAC. I believe you came across someone I know extremely well down at the CAC. I believe you had a run-in with the Dice Man Ronnie Vegas at one point. Can you tell us what happened when you met up with Dice?
Well, myself, a couple other gentlemen, we're in a three-on-three match, all titles on the line. Mr. Dice Man was on the outside of the ring. He was kind of managing some gentlemen that were there. And I got hung over the bottom ropes by a gentleman by the name of Rob Kincaid. Rob has since passed away. But Rob hung me over the ropes, and Ronnie let me know he was there. He he slapped the taste right out of my mouth.
Dice tends to do that to people. Now, CAC, obviously a very, very worthwhile organization. It is designed to help wrestlers in need. It's a way for people that were in the wrestling business that aren't as active anymore to get together with people that they knew, interact with people that now weren't necessarily in the business but have followed it for a long time, and people that were in the business in whatever way, sort of a fellowship. What's the CAC mean to you personally when you get to go down there?
Well, for me, it's a way to network. We make a lot of connections down there. If you're a promoter, it's a great place to go. You know, you got a lot of young talent coming in because they do put on some shows and stuff down there as well. You get to kind of rub elbows with some of the greats. And again, like I said, you get to meet the new talent too. So it's a good brotherhood family type thing to be a part of.
One of the things in wrestling that has gained a lot of traction in the last few years is women's wrestling. You see a lot more emphasis placed on it, not only independently, but out of the major organizations. Wrestling for women might be the most lucrative and the best as far as contributions to promotions that it has ever been. What's your take on the current women's wrestling scene?
Well, you know, I don't follow it too closely. I do have a few friends in that have been doing it for a while. Miss Sunny Days, for example. Sunny and I, she was part of the group with us, the Natural Born Outlaws, with Mac Traeger and myself. There are so many of the young ladies now that are in this that are just phenomenal workers. I enjoy watching them as well because, man, I learn a lot from them as well.
Now, one of the more controversial aspects of wrestling since the women's wrestling has really taken off is intergender matches. Some people enjoy them. Some people despise them. Some people looked at them as more of a comedy break in a show. Some of them take them more seriously than that. There's a wide spectrum of opinions on intergender. What's your personal take on it?
As long as they can hold their own, I have no problem with it. You know, I'm not gonna. If I'm in a match with a woman, if she's in the ring, and she's one of the boys, so you take it as you get it.
Absolutely, and as someone that has wrestled a fair amount of intergender matches and taken some of the hardest hits I've ever taken from the female competitors, I know there's a lot out there that can hold their own for sure.
Absolutely.
You've been around long enough in your career that you've been to several places. Everyone that's in the wrestling industry knows that wherever a promoter can find a space large enough to put a ring, they usually can put up a ring and hold a show there. I'm sure you've been to some odd venues in your day, as we all have. What would you say to date has been the oddest venue where you've wrestled?
Oh, boy. There are so many. You know, I've been to places where they set up in somebody's backyard. I've been to places where they do it in a bar. I've been to places where they do it to where they put ropes around posts inside of a bar. There's no real ring. It's just some mats on the floor. I mean, to pinpoint one specific, I don't know that I could do that. It's just... You know, like you said, the promoters, they're there to make money, you know, and unfortunately, sometimes we're dumb enough to fall into the trap that they set for us, but it is what it is, you know?
Absolutely. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, tomorrow is Canada Day, and a few days after that, of course, Independence Day here in the United States. Patriotic wrestlers for both countries have been a staple of the business since the wrestling industry formed, more or less. Looking at the landscape of things through your career, who would you say are some of the best patriotic-based wrestlers that you've seen out there, be it a Canadian national doing a patriotic gimmick for Canada or an American doing one for the United States?
Well, years ago when I first broke into business, you know, the current promoter slash trainer that I had, Scott Ferris, had me doing a gimmick known as Pitman, and he was from Canada. So, I mean, I had a lot of fun with that. I've always enjoyed watching guys like Lance Storm, and I believe you've probably met him as well. But, you know, it's hard to pinpoint stuff like that. You know, I don't follow a lot of that stuff. There's probably stuff more I should follow. But, you know, I've been in the business almost 20 years. And at my age now, it's, you know, I won't say I'm on my way out, but it's one of those things that, you know, I learn what I can learn. I do what I can do. And I'm there to entertain the fans. And whether it's for the Canadian thing or the American thing, it all works.
Absolutely. I'm a tiny bit sad that you didn't mention me with Canadian patriotic wrestlers, but I'll forgive it. Well, we have hit the point of the show where we have a game we like to play called Word Association. You have done this before. I'll throw out the names of some people that you likely have come across in your career, and the first word or two that pops into mind, that is the answer. Are you prepared for a round of Word Association?
Sure, let's give it a shot.
All right, here we go. Mr. Sexy Pants Paul Preston.
Excellent worker.
Kodiak Jack.
I'm not going to touch that one.
Jake Hale.
I'm sorry?
Jake Hale. Joey Kid Owens. Mm-hmm.
Oh, phenomenal worker.
T-Rex.
Referee.
Miss Sarah.
Up and coming.
Al Tubbs.
Strange.
Goblin.
Much respect.
Eric Wright.
Awesome heel.
Kelly Klein.
Top talent.
Billy Moon.
Sadistic.
Mean Mike Miller.
Classic.
My last name, Buddy Wayne.
Much respect.
I mentioned JKO, whom you were in the match with at CAC. He is actually second generation out of a three-generation family. His father, Dangerous Bull Don Basher, has wrestled for eons. I've known Kid since he was roughly 16. He's been in the business for a while. And his son, Jonathan, whom I also wrestled, absolutely phenomenal. I know third and fourth generations are becoming more and more of a thing in professional wrestling. Have you had the chance to come across many of the third and fourth generation families and work with multiple members of such?
You know, the only one I think I've come across that's been multi-generational, Chaz Taylor. Of course, Tugboat Taylor was his dad. My own son wrestled for a while, but it didn't really pan out to anything. Other than that, I don't believe I've met many of it. We've been multi-generational.
I'll just pretend that you mean to say except for the moonshiners.
Yeah, we can go there, I guess.
Well, at this point, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by, and I'm sure he has some questions, so I'm going to pass things to him for a bit.
Sure.
Thank you, Sign Guy. Hello, and welcome back, Lone Star.
Oh, thank you.
Lone Star, did you know that there is a college system serving the northern portions of the greater Houston area with a total enrollment of 85,000 students? This college is named the Lone Star College System, and it's the fastest growing community college system in the nation. My question is, have you heard of this college, the Lone Star College, and if so, have you contacted its athletic department and scheduled an autograph meet and greet day?
No, I have never heard of them. That's kind of awesome to hear, though. And no, I haven't contacted them to schedule any kind of autograph signing.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Well, Lone Star, we had on a graduate from the Player Nation High School and the Thousandaire Extraordinaire manager, T. Jones, who is a wrestling manager from Alaska and has been a frequent flyer to several events here in the Northwest. Most recently, he was at the Marysville, Washington Strawberry Festival, Rumble in the Park, and he's also been to Vaughn, Washington. Has his wrestling scout contacted you to let you know that T. is considering you as a top fall 2019 prospect for his stable of wrestlers? Has he contacted you?
No, not as of yet, no.
Oh, because, all right. Well, that's fine. You and Sign Guy talked earlier about tag team competition. Well, tonight at Blue Collar Wrestling, we will have the Thoroughbred, Caleb Rex, and the Northwest Assassin going up against BCW Worldwide Tag Team Champions, wonderful Zach Winters and JB Moonshine. Do you know if this is a 2 out of 3 falls match?
I haven't been in contact with BCW's management on what the particulars are of the show, so I couldn't tell you.
Oh, okay. Well, knowing that Zach Winters and JB Moonshine are going up against the Thoroughbred Caleb Rex and the Northwest Assassins, can you give us your predictions for this match? Should the referee call it fairly and mistake-free?
If he calls it straight down the middle, then I'd have to go with wonderful Zach Winters. You know, those guys know what they're doing. Caleb Rex is new, and this Northwest Assassin, I've not seen him do much of anything except stand outside the ring and cause issues.
Wow. All right. Okay. Okay. Well, Lone Star, I remember first seeing you in action at the Tiger Grange Hall. It's probably been 9 years now, and I have now seen the rookie Caleb Rex in action. In many ways, Caleb reminds me of you when I first saw you at the Grange Hall. You both are of similar height and weight and tenacity. In fact, I was at that match at the Grange Hall when I overheard you tell a fan that it was unwise to touch another man's cowboy hat. The identity of this fan remains unknown. My question is, if Caleb Rex were steeped in cowboy tradition, say he grew up in Texas or Oklahoma or maybe Wyoming, do you think he would also defend his cowboy hat like you did?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. You know, the thing about that, it's a respect issue. You know, it's like, you don't touch my woman. You know, you don't touch my hat. You leave my truck alone. You know, it's a Texas thing. It's a man thing.
Do you believe that I was correct in saying that Caleb Rex was similar to you in height and weight and tenacity?
Well, I'll go with the tenacity part. I think Caleb's a little bit bigger than I am as far as height and weight. We're probably not far apart, but he's a little bit bigger.
Yes, I'd say based on video analysis and what I have seen being live and watching him in action, I'm going to say he's about an inch and a half taller, maybe about 15 to 20 pounds heavier.
That's probably about right.
Yes. I'm very good at video analysis. Okay. All right. Well, Lone Star, it's hard to believe, but 2019 will be half over by the time tonight's BCW card is ending. I believe in 2 weeks' time, we will start seeing Halloween decorations in stores. Can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners if you have heard if Blue Collar Wrestling will be bringing in any talent from the Gulf Coast states or Michigan into Blue Collar Wrestling for the Halloween season? Have you heard anything?
You know, as I said before, I'm not in with the management and stuff too much. They don't talk too much to me. They let me know what I'm doing week to week, that kind of thing, but that's about it. I'm not up in there like I used to be.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, Lone Star, on Friday on the Turnbuckle Turmoil show, we had Amateur to Professional Day, and we had on four guests who had great amateur backgrounds. They were Nick Curry, Rick Knight, Mac Traeger himself, and James Rampage. I asked James Rampage this question. James, now that transgenderism and transgender athletes have been accepted into society, and indeed, transgenders are succeeding in high school athletic sporting events, when will we see the first Blue Collar Wrestling match that features a babyface transgender wrestler versus a heel wrestler that has been trained and he or her himself is mostly mentally guided by artificial intelligence? When do you think we will see this?
Hey, this is professional wrestling, brother. Who knows? Could be any day.
Wow. Okay. All right. Once again, that is a transgender babyface versus an AI heel. Okay. It's a very good question. Okay. All right. Well, Lone Star, I pointed out to James Rampage that Army Ranger training, Green Beret training, and Navy SEAL training is the toughest training a person can undergo and is way above normal boot camp training. In fact, during the last week of Navy SEAL training, they undergo Hell Week, where the prospects only get about 2 hours or slightly more of sleep per day, all the while doing exercises in the Atlantic Ocean off Norfolk, Virginia. James Rampage was of the opinion that he could pass Navy SEAL training if he had tried so when he was 18 to 22 years old. Do you believe you yourself, if you could travel back in time, could pass Navy SEAL training or Green Beret training?
You know, I was in the military for 14 years, United States Army. And I tell you, some of the training that I went through was tough. And I've known a few that had that training with the Green Berets and stuff. And that's Hell Week doesn't cover it. The word hell does not cover it. But do I personally think I could have gone through it? I would have given it my best shot. In my mind, I say, yes, I could do it. But, you know, we'll never know.
Yes, Yes, and another school that's often overlooked, especially for the mental part that's very grueling, is sniper school, sniping.
Yes.
Well, that's it. Yes. All right. Well, can you tell our Turnbuckle, we at Turnbuckle Turmoil, thank you for your service. Can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil audience what rate you were or what job you had in the Army?
I had two different jobs, per se. I started out in field artillery when I first broke in, and then I went to supply school, transferred out of field artillery and got into supply, and became a unit weapons specialist.
Wow, very good. All right. Would it be safe to say that you had 105-millimeter howitzer training? And were you part of a 105-millimeter howitzer gun crew?
Exactly.
Wow. All right. How would you say this 105-millimeter howitzer training has it aided you in any way in your BCW career?
Well, you know, with all the training and stuff we had to have, I think it made me the tough son of a gun that I am today, in order to be able to do the professional wrestling that I do.
Wow, okay, all right. Okay, well, at this time, I'm going to turn it back over to Sign Guy, and I'd like to tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners that QT will finally be making a long-awaited return to Blue Collar Wrestling tonight. I've been away for several months. Yes.
Well, welcome back, my friend.
Oh, okay. Thank you. All right. Back to you, guys.
All right. Thank you, QT. Well, Lone Star, one of the parts of professional wrestling that has been absent on the national stage for a long time that is slowly making somewhat of a comeback is the art of managers. We've seen them much more prominently on the independent circuit. And managers are something that have traditionally aided wrestling promotions over the years, especially on an independent level. What do you think of the current art of managing, and have you employed very many managers in your career?
Well, managers, you know, they tend to steal the thunder of what's going on. I've never been a big fan of managers. I've had very few in my career because I can stand on my own two feet and handle my own business. So I really don't need them. I've had a few, but they've never really been that accessible or helpful to my career.
One of the ways that a lot of wrestlers try to stay in the business when their in-ring career is winding down or stopped, whether it be by choice or because injuries dictate or whatever, is getting into the commentary aspect of wrestling. There's a lot more of video and televised product in wrestling, especially at the independent level now, than there was, say, even 5 years ago, with all of the streaming services and the video on demand and internet pay-per-views and what have you. Is commentary something that you've ever considered for when you decide that the in-ring is over for you?
You know, it's one of those things that you always think about, especially when you get up there in age. I mean, you know, in July I'll be 51, so it's one of those things that you have to kind of think about, because you can't do this forever. You know, your body's not going to take it forever. Commentary, I've never been one much of a talker. Interviews like this one aren't the easiest for me to do. I'm not real comfortable with talking. I like to make my hands and feet do my talking for me in the ring. But if it came down to it, I mean, if that's what it was, you know, I could probably be a trainer, or commentating is something I could probably do with a little bit of help.
blue collar wrestling, we have, of course, Mason Storm and Douglas Rockefeller. They do a good job with the commentary there. Are they people that you've talked to in the past about what they do, be it just kind of on a cursory level to try to get a feel for what they are doing, or just out of curiosity on a different aspect in wrestling, or you kind of stay away from the commentary team?
Well, Mason Storm, him again, I've known him for many, many years. And so, I mean, he's somebody I could sit next to Mason Storm and probably work with him on a commentary thing. Douglas Rockefeller, he's a different sort. He's great at what he does. I won't take that away from him at all. But I don't know that he's somebody that I could sit with without trying to probably beat his ass over saying something.
Understood. The aforementioned Mr. Rockefeller actually got started in this industry in Great Britain. He was trained in Great Britain before moving back to the United States. The British style is a very different animal than American professional wrestling, even now with the advent of so many different types of styles coming out of England and Great Britain. A lot of it is still very mat and submission based. When you go back 15, 20, 30 years ago, it was much, much more so. Are you a fan of the British style of wrestling, and have you trained in that style very often?
I have not trained in that style very often. I am somewhat of a fan of it. I love to watch the more wrestling style that they have. They're a lot more brutal, I think, than what we are. So I don't think there's a lot of guys here that could handle what they do.
Now, if you were to get into a time machine, travel back in time, we talked about how you've been a part of several tag teams in your career. Which tag team of the past do you think that you most would fit into?
Meaning the ones that I've already been a part of?
Just any team in history, just if you were to go back and join a tag team of the past, where do you think you would fit best?
I think I could compliment the Rockers, being that I've actually wrestled Marty Jannetty. But I think I could either them or maybe the Rock and Roll Express, because that was more along the timeline where I would have felt comfortable.
Rock and Roll Express still active to this very day. You could maybe form a 6-man team right here today.
There you go.
We've also seen in professional wrestling the advent of the Japanese style. Japanese wrestling in the United States has exploded in popularity over the last 5 years, with New Japan Pro Wrestling being televised on Access TV. New Japan is touring the United States this year. They've got a relationship now with Ring of Honor. Previously, they had teamed up with WCW to a much less successful stint. Is the Japanese style something that you enjoy either watching and studying it or participating in that style?
Well, their Japanese strong style is something that I wasn't sure of until here recently. I actually got a chance to work Master Fugo when him and Ricky Fuji came into BCW when they were touring the Northwest. The style was considerably different than what I'm used to, and yet it worked out well. I actually ended up with a very strong friendship through the whole thing with Master Fugo and with Ricky Fuji. And it's something that, after talking with him even, I'd love to see, you know, them come back, or maybe Lone Star could tour Japan.
Wouldn't shock me if we saw in the future a Lone Star tour of Japan. One of my favorite Japanese promotions, probably a promotion you wouldn't say is your favorite, but I've been a big fan of DDT, is a promotion like DDT, or here in the United States, a gouge or a hood slam, something that you would work for if the opportunity arose, or is that too far removed from what you normally do?
Well, I wouldn't say it's too far normally removed. It's one of those things that they're a whole different setup. Hood slam is it's a different animal for sure. I've had a lot of friends go through there, and they said they had a blast. So, I mean, why not? I'll work just anywhere.
All right. We talked about the Japanese potential tour. One of the traditional parts of wrestling here in the Northwest has been a lot of Pacific Island wrestlers have passed through here. People like the Tonga Kid, Rikishi, Coco Samoa, Jimmy Snuka have all been very popular with a lot of Pacific Island populations being in the Northwest. Have you ever toured any of the Pacific Island nations? And if not, is that something that would go onto your bucket list?
I have not toured any of the Pacific Islands tours, but yes, it is definitely on my bucket list. I have worked with the Tonga Kid and Rikishi years ago, and I was pretty good friends with Jimmy Snuka for a while when he was here in the Pacific Northwest as well, working for Sandy Barr.
And we always associate the Pacific Northwest a lot of times with Don Owen, and rightfully so. But there also were a lot of other promoters that maybe not at the level of Don Owen, they also were big influences in the Northwest. You have guys like Dean Silverstone, who ran parts of Washington and Idaho and I believe a little bit of Oregon. You have guys like Don Owen's brothers that ran different towns. You have Dutch Savage that was a promoter in Seattle. You have Al Tomko that ran BC as well as Northern Washington. When historically people always look to Don Owens as the guy in the Northwest, do you think that sometimes the other promoters get overlooked in the shadows when they were maybe just as important as Don Owens?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, we all have a part to play in this, and I think everybody put in their part, whether it was Don or Tomko or Dutch Savage or any of those guys. I think that it was hard to, with some of them, they tried to fill Don's shoes once Don shut down. And it's one of those things that, you know, there's never going to be another Don Owen, unfortunately. He was an amazing man, and he knew how to run a promotion and make it work.
I mentioned Dean Silverstone, who ran, I don't know if it was considered an opposition exactly, but he ran in the same time frame as Don Owen, using different talent and a slightly different region of the Northwest. Is his promotion something that you're familiar with, having seen video or talked to guys that work for Dean?
I've talked with some of the guys, and you know, you kind of bounce things off of each other when you talk about that kind of stuff. You know, I never got a chance to work for Don. I broke in a little after he had retired, but I did work for some of the other guys, and Dean definitely had a different set going. But a lot of times the guys were like, well, you know, the man paid fair and treated us right. So, you know, it worked.
I was told a story from a guy that wrestled in the Pacific Northwest for a while. I don't want to mention any names just in case he doesn't want to have that out there publicly. But he said that there is an actual hit put on him by one of the promoters here in the Northwest. It would have been somewhere in the early 80s. A wrestler in Canada working for Al Tomko was offered a large sum of money to break the guy's leg during a match. I know that you don't often hear of that level of something happening, but in your career, have you ever come across a situation where there is a hit put out on another wrestler?
Yeah, well, when I broke in, they called it stretching somebody. You know, you rough them up a little bit. You let them know that, hey, you're probably not wanted here because of your attitude, or, you know, your wrestling skills aren't where they should be. Maybe you should think about doing something else, you know. So I don't know that we call it a hit. But, yeah, I've dealt with a little bit of that. I was kind of a victim of it early on myself until I kind of proved myself. They wanted to see if I was going to make it or not, and – well, almost 20 years later, I'm still here.
We know that stretching is something that happened very, very famously in the Calgary promotion for Stu Hart. He liked to stretch people down in his basement. That went on until just a few years prior to his passing, and possibly a little bit after that with his son's taking over. Did you ever have a chance to go up into that region of Canada and take part in anything resembling what the Hart family was like?
No, unfortunately I didn't. I've not actually made it across that border yet. That's another one on my bucket list. So any of the promoters that are out there listening, Lone Star, get a hold of me. I'd love to wrestle for you in Canada.
Attention, Michelle Starr, if you're listening. Now, Sunny Day, someone that you have teamed with and wrestled against, is up in Alaska today. She's making her debut up there. I have also had the opportunity to go up into Alaska. A lot of their guys come down here. Is Alaska something that is on the radar for Lone Star at this point?
Absolutely. Sunny Days, you know, that's my sister from another mister. Again, like you said, she was part of the Natural Born Outlaws for a while. Somebody got in her head, I want to say probably the Brandt dynasty. And, you know, she's kind of turned her back on us right now. But, you know, it's one of those things that with the wrestling business, it happens. You know, you get your things misconstrued, and that's what happens.
We saw almost a reversal between herself and Miss Sarah, with Miss Sarah seemingly becoming extremely popular and breaking away from Mr. Sexy Pants Paul Preston. Is a potential alliance between yourself and Mac Traeger with Miss Sarah something that has been discussed amongst you?
No, it has not been discussed, but it's not something that is completely off the table either. Yeah, I mean, hey, what happens, happens. You know, this is wrestling.
Absolutely. We talked about how good Goblin was and is. We mentioned how great that Paul Preston is. They're very quietly becoming some of the best in the industry right now. But the Northwest is full of a lot of really great talent that maybe doesn't get recognized enough for how good they are, be it because they aren't promoting themselves very heavily, or because of just the Pacific Northwest not being recognized in general for talent, or whatever reason it could be, who are some of the people that you've seen, be it in person or on video or visiting other shows or what have you, that you think might be potential superstars that people around the company or the country are sleeping on right now?
You know, I really try to focus on where I'm at and what's going on with me and my situation. I don't get out too much to watch the other talents. I do try to keep up with like NJPW and a few of the top promotions like that, you know, that are on TV, Ring of Honor, you know, with Bob coming in and helping with seminars and stuff with us. TJ Perkins coming in and doing a seminar with us and doing a show with us at BCW. And there is, like you said, there's so much talent out there. There's so many new guys and gals that coming in. It's hard to keep track of them and go, oh, that guy's cool. Oh, that guy's going to be awesome. Watch this guy. And he's going to come, he's going to be somewhere someday, you know. It's really tough to do that.
When TJ Perkins was up here a few weeks ago, he kept raving about how good the officiating was in his match. You've been in there with a whole lot of officials during the course of your career, and you were, in fact, trained by one of the finest officials in Sandy Barr. Who are some of the better officials out there that you've come across during the entirety of your career?
You know, I worked with, like, Mark Watson. Albert McClure was a pretty good referee. Tex Thompson back in the day actually started out as a referee, and he actually was pretty good back there. I've been in the ring with you even. I love being in the ring with you. The communication is great. You're always checking to make sure everybody's safe and thing, people are doing what they're supposed to be doing, and we appreciate that. There's been a few guys that have come in and they've gone around, you know, but the top ones I can think of that I personally enjoyed being in the ring with was Mark Watson and you yourself, Sign Guy, and I appreciate that.
I appreciate that. I am big on safety. Oh, might want to say a thanks to Jason Ayers for that. He kind of drilled that into me. Well, we're down to a few minutes left in the show today, and I want to give you ample time. If there is anything you would like to say to the listeners, plug and promote absolutely anything you might want to plug and promote, upcoming appearances, merchandise, social medias, your favorite bakery, anything in the world, floor is all yours.
You know, all I can say is this is Lone Star. This is who I am. You know, I can put me out there. Just come and see me on any Sunday, BCW, Portland, Oregon, 7611 North Exeter. Doors open 5:30, show 6 o'clock. Be prepared for a good show. We're there every Sunday. Come see Lone Star. Come see us all. We're here for you.
And don't touch the path.
Absolutely. Well, Lone Star, I want to thank you very much for being on the show again. I appreciate it greatly. And I will see you there at 7611 North Exeter. Fans, if you get the chance, definitely go out there and watch Lone Star. Still at the top of his game. Got that television championship around his waist. So go out there, support Lone Star and what he does. We'll be back with you next week. Next Thursday, we have a Buddha special. Billy Mattern will be on to talk about the big benefit show he is running for one of his family members. And then on Friday afternoon next week, Cassidy Keith out of the great state of Michigan, world traveler, is going to be with us. So make sure you have plans in place for that. And we'll also talk to you next Sunday afternoon, the return of Karn Alexander. And Karn's got a big surprise for QT in the works, so definitely you want to be here next week for that. And we'll talk to you soon.